Hey, music lovers. The Can a Mom Show podcast, in collaboration with Lambkin Guitars, is giving away a custom-built, one-of-a-kind electric guitar built by Josh Lambkin. The solid one-piece hemp wood body includes a built-in glass bowl piece. Yeah, you heard me right. You can take a hit and then play a lick. Now's your chance to help the Can a Mom Show crush cannabis stigma with your entry. Register for the hemp guitar giveaway online at lambkinguitars.com. That's L-A-M-K-I-N guitars.com. The drawing will be part of a 420 celebration at the Goods Dispensary in Somerville, Massachusetts, where the guitar is on display for the month of April. But don't worry, you don't have to live in Mass or be present to win. Visit lambkinguitars.com to scope out the hemp guitar giveaway details and entry form. You'll even find a video of what could be your guitar in action. L-A-M-K-I-N guitars.com. If you're a cannabis business owner looking to expand into new markets and need guidance and support you can trust, consider Collateral Base, a group that has done it before in multiple merit-based and limited market states. Collateral Base was founded by an experienced cannabis attorney with highly educated consultants with master's degrees and years of experience in the cannabis industry. The Collateral Base team is confident they know cannabis licensing better than any of their peers. And I encourage you to see for yourself. It just takes one phone call. If you're ready to expand your cannabis business into new limited markets, contact Collateral Base today at 309-306-1095. That's 309-306-1095. Or visit collateralbase.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of Everything is Personal. Today, we have a special guest with us, Mr. Jeff Finnerty, who is the Chief Marketing Officer of Ayr Wellness. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lance. Great to be here. Appreciate the opportunity to chat today.
I'm really curious. I know about a little bit about Ayr and sort of it's so amazing how this company is just expanding rapidly and all that stuff. And I really want to dive into some of the work and some of the transition work that you've done from being there and then being the CMO now. But before we get into that, I want to learn a little bit more about you. So where did you actually grow up?
I grew up in Connecticut. I was born in upstate New York, and then you know, elementary school through high school was in a town called Guilford, Connecticut.
Are you only child, or you have brothers, sisters?
Oh, I have an older brother and a younger sister, so I'm the guy in the middle.
So how was your childhood?
My childhood, we had a great childhood. A strong family, lots of uncles and cousins, and opportunities to get together and celebrate holidays and graduations and birthdays and all that. And so it was really a pleasant upbringing.
It's like a surprising kind of upbringing nowadays, because a lot of people I talk to, like, parents were divorced, I traveled around the country, I live with my mom. I had somebody, my last one, who parents separated and her mom moved to Alaska, and she ended up like growing up in Alaska with 30 people, the same 30 people from elementary school all the way through. So
ooh. Yeah, that's a small, narrow community there for sure.
So growing up in Connecticut, were you a sports guy?
Yeah. No, I love sports. Played football, basketball, and some baseball. And, even now I'm a head football coach for youth football. I had my older son, just coached him all the way through eighth grade, and those guys are off playing high school football, freshman football now. And my youngest son is in fourth grade, and I'm now looping back around and teaching 8 and 9 year olds how to play football. So
what was your team?
My team, my favorite team, as far as
I'm just like Connecticut. You know, it's like what's the team? Are you going Patriots?
I'm a Giants guy. Yeah. Now that's the my brother actually lives in a town about 20 minutes south of me, and they HBO Inside Sports did a show when the Giants and the Patriots were playing, you know, in the Super Bowl years ago.
Yeah.
That his town is actually equidistant to Giants Stadium and to Foxborough. So. You definitely get a mix.
Yeah, that's why Connecticut's sort of in the middle. It's like which team do you think? It's like when people live in Jersey, like are they North Jersey and South Jersey? Are they Philly fans? Are they more New York fans? Kind of thing. I get that a lot. I'm originally from Philly. I live in LA, but I'm all like Philly sports.
Nice. No, I lived down in Marlton, New Jersey for a little while, right across the river there.
So as you, went on your journey, were you going to school for something specific? Like how did your schooling and background contribute to your kind of trajectory in business as well?
Yeah, well, I went to school in Nashville, Tennessee, actually, and studied economics and psychology, which, you know, can the psychology piece, you know, when it comes to being a marketer and kind of understanding people's behaviors, it's fascinating. So it's kind of applying that. But you know, I didn't necessarily have that vision when I got to school, but coming out of school, I got the opportunity right out of college to work for the Coca-Cola company. And if you want to learn about brands and shopper marketing and all things about consumers, there's probably not a better laboratory environment to learn. I, tell people, I used to go to school every day at Coca-Cola University because I learned more there every day than I did in 4 years of college for sure.
So, what is some of the? I know it's like a long kind of journey there, but what would be some of the highlights that? You know, it's CPG is sort of the entry, let's say consumer packaged goods. But as you get in there and you're in the marketing kind of arena with Coca-Cola, what would be some of the areas that you said you learned in terms of branding and marketing, and how would you take some of that you learned and apply that to, you know, further your career in where you are today?
Yeah, I mean the biggest thing that I learned, and I learned it from talking to the folks that had been, you know, at Coke 20 or 30 years when I was first getting there, you know, one of the most powerful examples of what a brand means beyond a product, right? I mean, I got my Coke right here, but it's, you know, it's brown sugar water with bubbles, right? I mean, that's all it is. It's not rocket science. But if you may be familiar with the, when they came out with New Coke, right? They changed the formula, and it was the result of the great Pepsi challenge, right? So they would go and set up at supermarkets and amusement parks, and they'd have you drink two, A and B, and which one do you like better? And Pepsi's a little sweeter and a little flatter. And so when it first hits your tongue, you know, it's people would react to it like, oh, I like that better. Like it's just your mind, recognizing the sweetness. And they changed the formula to basically mimic Pepsi because they were getting their butt kicked, and Pepsi was doing a great job at, you know, marketing, you know, the campaign around, look at all these people choosing Pepsi, then, you know, they like it better. And people revolted, right? I mean, all of these loyal Coke consumers, but it was less about, oh, it just tastes a little different. It was that you changed this brand, the Coca-Cola, right, the brand, and it was people were writing in letters about, you know, I remember drinking a glass bottle of Coke on the end of the dock when my grandfather was teaching me to fish. And now that he's gone, when I drink a Coke, I remember that. And you just took it away from me, right? It was about the emotive connection. And it was about the fact that Coca-Cola was present in these moments in your life. And that you would monkey with that, you know, was so offensive. And, you know, of course, they brought it back, you know, the original formula and, you know, doubled sales, right? So some people say, you know, was that by design? It was not. But really, when you think about, for me, you know, we think about brands, and especially as we, you know, try to venture into that area, you know, in cannabis, where there's not a long life cycle. People have done a really good job of creating brands that have a loyal following. It's, you know, certainly we want to build them on things, you know, this is an agricultural product you put in your body, right? So you want to build it on a foundation of trust and transparency. And, you know, that's got to be the foundation, but you've got to be able to connect with consumers around a mission or a certain vibe, or, you know, that this is part of a health and wellness regimen for this brand, or this is a mission-driven brand, or this one is, you know, about just having a good time, and this one's about nostalgia. And, you know, and so we're, you know, intentionally building a broad portfolio of national brands there. Where, you know, some other MSOs, they've got two or three mega brands, and they put every form factor, you know, in that same brand across. And that's one way to do it. Certainly the brand will have higher sales because you're putting more products into fewer brands. But I don't think it recognizes the fact that there is no cannabis consumer, right? There are cannabis consumers from 18 to 90 years old, and in every, you know, geography and every socioeconomic, you know, situation. I mean, we know that in every state that has a medical or recreational program, adults 21 and over, if you take all that population, 46% of those folks have purchased legal cannabis in the last 6 months. Like, that's mind-blowing. Here's the even more interesting thing, is that 27% of adults 21 and over in those same states are interested in trying cannabis, right? So combine those, you get 73% of the adult population in 38 states that either are already purchasing legal cannabis or are interested in doing it, right? So when you build...
Is that study include CBD, or that...
No, this is cannabis.
This is cannabis. Interesting. Is cannabis.
Yeah, it's from BDS. I should probably give them credit for that. But here's the fascinating thing is that I went to a conference last December where they gave that same stat. It was 73% of people are interested or have purchased, except in last December, it was 43% had purchased and 30 were interested.
Wow.
And this summer now, we did the study, and it's still 73% to get purchased or interested, but now it's 27%. So that 3%, 10% of those 30% have actually moved in and purchased cannabis. And so when you think about building brands, like what are the brands and the messaging to connect with somebody who's not a cannabis consumer, but they're interested? It's very different than someone who has already moved up the spectrum and they're into some of the higher potency concentrates, and they have the tornadoes, and they're in an entirely different place than maybe somebody who is interested in the idea of a THC seltzer. Right? Like, that makes sense to me. That's similar to a White Claw or something like that. I can make that connection with, you know, not necessarily going right into whole flower or, you know, vapes or concentrates.
I'm really curious. I've been in the cannabis space for a very long time, and building a brand in cannabis has been like a huge challenge. And when I talked to Weedmaps at some point, I was trying to ascertain, do people gravitate towards a brand? Is there any loyalty of coming back? And they were saying daily deals. So for me, daily deals means like your consumers are just caring about, hey, I don't know the difference between this and this, but I know I can get it for $30 instead of paying for $50. So how do you establish this, what you were saying? And I agree with you completely. It's a huge difference, but I don't think the consumer understands that.
No, and honestly, I think that the problems have been created by cannabis companies, right? There's a lack, the number of cannabis companies that price based on THC percentage in a flower is like, oh, this one's 30%, therefore this should be $60 an eighth, right? But this one came back at 18%, so we'll sell that to you for $15. Like, that's crazy, because it's not like grain alcohol, right? Is, you know, it's the terpenes and the full profile of everything in there. There you can grow terrific, terrific cannabis that has 18% THCA in it, but has the right terp profile to really have this impactful experience, and versus, you know, you can dry it out a little better and get a test result at 30. So, but the problem is we're not having those discussions with our consumers, right? We're saying if the reason to believe is high THC percentage, well, A, it's misleading because it's not necessarily the experience that someone's looking for. And then your brand is really just THC or the daily deal, right? Where can I get the highest THC percentage for the lowest price? Well, you'll never build a brand that way, right? You have to think about what are your intentional, you know, reasons to believe, right? And so each of our brands, you know, we're trying to do that founded. What do people care about? Do we as a brand storyteller start to help educate, which has to be a part of this, right? It's too easy, you know, to get caught up in trying to hit a revenue number this month in this state. And so, yeah, we got to do 50% off because the guy down the street's doing 50% off. And then you just get caught in that cycle. And then you never establish, you know, it's a race to the bottom that you can't get out of because the only thing you know is to keep pulling the lever of, okay, we'll go 60% off next month, right? Versus trying to say, well, what are we doing that's differentiated? And that's, you know, one of the things that I was really attracted to when I first came to AIR was, you know, having a conversation with John Sandelman, who's our founder and our CEO. Mm. And he is very passionate about this idea that, you know, our mission is to be the largest producer of high quality cannabis products at scale. Mm. And, you know, it's interesting that he's been saying that for 18, 24 months, and you don't hear a lot of other people talking about high quality at scale. There are great small producers in every state, you know, the 30,000, you know, square feet, they're growing terrific stuff. But we're trying to accomplish that with 1 million square feet of canopy, right? Across, you know, 8 different states. And we've got a brilliant guy leading our cultivation, Mark Bruno, and when you see these brands that we're trying to launch in the flower category, and that they mean something around unique genetics that are grown to produce at scale, you know, full terpene, nice bag appeal, got a good nose. It's all of the things beyond, oh, look, we hit a 30, you know, it's great. Yeah, look, if we get a 30% test and we have all of those things and it's a high THC percentage, that's great. But we're very careful to say we're not going to say that this Lit Reserve flower, which is one of our brands, and the Reserve is the top tier. Well, it's only that Reserve if it gets a 30% THC, right? And then we move it up and down. It's about the genetics. There are a certain set of genetics and they have a little different post process on them and the way that we finish and the number of buds that go into a bag. So that we can talk to people about the terpene profiles and these unique genetics that we're launching in every state. We're going in the last 60 days, 50 new genetics across all of our cultivation facilities as we launch our kind flower and our lit flower. And so that's where we're trying to build those brands around genetics that you can't get anywhere else, that have a story behind them. The breeder has a story behind it. And here's why this is a unique experience for you. Because long term, if it's about daily deals and THC percentage, it's every time the guy next door drops the price, then you're just going to have to keep doing that as well. And the industry is going to have a hard time surviving in that environment, right? A lot of people.
Well, it's already feeling the effects of that. If you look at Canada, and especially, you know, the laws they created in Canada, what you just said is exactly what's happening in Canada. It's all about high THC because they're not allowed to market anything. And people are misled to believe that this product is superior to this product just because it has the higher THC count. But before we dive into AIR, I really want to like take this a little bit further. But how did you go from Coca-Cola to cannabis? What was the journey?
I went from Coca-Cola. It's been about 16 years there, and then worked on a great restaurant brand, Firehouse Subs. And then from there, I got a call in early 2019 from a friend that I started with actually at Coke back in 1998. Like literally we had two sales territories that were next to each other. And he said, hey, I got an interesting opportunity. I'm going to be running this cannabis company down in Florida. You know, I'd love to have you come in and run, you know, sales and marketing. And you know, it had never occurred to me to get into cannabis. But I, you know, it's like, oh well, I flew down and checked it out. I remember having, we were in this shade house, a 10-acre shade house, and having a conversation about utilization of capital and some other things. And I'm just surrounded by plants, right? And it's like, when does this become normal? Right? You know, because this is it's crazy. But you know, when I went and saw some of the retail locations, they had this. It was Grow Healthy in Florida, and I was, you know, this is it's not a head shop, you know, from the 1970s. I mean, these are, you know, really professional retail locations that are welcoming, and you know, the education and the passion of the people that work in there. It was very interesting. You know, and Florida's a medical cannabis state. And, you know, personally, I have a younger sister who has fibromyalgia, and she for 5 years couldn't work, right? She was on disability, just couldn't work because the pain was too much. But then she got her medical card in Connecticut, and it changed her life. I mean, she was present again, like, you know, with the family. And then she got a job, you know, doing environmental cleanup in the New Haven Harbor, which is a very physically demanding job that she could have, I mean, dreamed of doing that. And, you know, and it was, I had a personal experience where I saw, you know, cannabis being used, you know, to treat a medical condition, and it changed lives. And I saw that day in and day out, you know, when I first got to Grow Healthy. I remember we launched RSO, which there wasn't a lot of it. I talked to a lot of doctors.
So it's Rick Simpson oil.
Rick Simpson oil, yeah. And there were only a couple of providers that were doing it, and doctors were telling me they don't consistently make it, so it comes in and out. And so some of their patients actually order it, you know, they tell them to order it from Canada, even though it's illegal, you know. But it had such an impact on their lives. And I remember I got a voicemail about 5 weeks after we launched it. And we committed to having these strains, specific RSOs, and we would always have them in the store, because if somebody found something that was working for them medically, you know, you have to be able to make sure that they can come back and get it. And I had a voicemail. I saved it. I don't think I have it anymore on my phone, but I had it for like a year. But a woman said, "You're literally saving my life, you know, and you should talk to my doctor about my cell counts. Like, it's amazing, you know, what's this done?" And that's, if you can't take pride in that and really, you know, motivate and, you know, drive that into the culture of your organization, like where you've got, you know, pride in what you're doing. And it's not just like, oh, okay, you guys sell weed, right? No, we're changing lives, yeah. You know, and we get to do that every day. Every customer comes in Florida as a patient, you know? So it's pretty powerful stuff. And so as I thought about my sister, and her experience, and I, you know, came down and visited Grow Healthy. You know, I was really excited to get into the cannabis industry, and then, you know, did that for a couple of years. And, you know, then I met John and Jason Griffith, who's our chief operating officer, and started talking about, hey, I could do this, you know, on a much larger scale. And what was fascinating was, you know, they built the organization at that point, a ton of M&A, like right after I got here, you know, so they had a couple of states, but it was really focused on high quality cultivation capabilities and financial discipline and operations. They had one person that worked in marketing. Right? So it was like, yeah, I'm not coming here to run marketing. We got to build it, right? You know, and now we got, you know, nearly a 50 person team covering, you know, all of our retail, wholesale marketing and in the brand building and our digital marketing. It's been an exciting year and a half doing that.
It's very rapid growth with AIR, from what I've noticed. One of the things you said, and I completely connect with you to the medicinal aspects of the plant, and you know, I've stories of, you know, people given 6 months to live, they live for 6 years, and all the cancer and everything else. But this notion, and Florida is a great example because it's a medical state, it's a fully vertical state, so you can control your own destiny from seed, you know, literally all the way to sale, as yep. Everybody wants to. But then you have all these other states that are opening up as they become quote unquote recreational. And to me, it's adult use, not really recreational, but they call it recreational. How can you maintain this whole, because brand building, and I'm still going back to that because I don't believe that we as an industry have done a really good job building brands, and it takes a lot of education. But there's this being in California and coming from, you know, Prop 215 and SB 420, going to medicinal use and then creating recreational, I can see the industry shifted right away. Like all the people that are medical patients, they don't have the same exact selection available to them. They don't have the same, you know, the same sort of, even the marketing is not driven towards them anymore. It's a lot of these things that we have variety and look at our moon rocks and look at these and look at those. And we have these vapes and you can get a high potency, you know, THC vape. How do we create, because wellness is in your name, right? How do we continue building this brand throughout the country? Because it's so fragmented since we don't have a federal program in place to maintain that brand integrity that still goes and connects to your story and your vision and your mission.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of having, you know, we think about two different things, like building a retail brand, right? Where you're literally, you know, we have to be everything to everyone, right? But our product brands, and we've got 11 national product brands and another probably dozen regional brands, that gives you the opportunity to kind of narrow the focus on who you're talking to, right? And that's why we have the ability, this is about wellness. This one is clearly about high potency, right? This is about variety or nostalgia. And as you, it's a lot harder to build and launch 11 brands than it would be two or three, right? And so we're what I would call in the kind of brand deployment phase, not the brand building, because we got to get it deployed and put it across our state. You know, make sure that John likes to talk about, you know, an iPhone in Iowa works exactly like the one you buy in Florida. How do we do that? You know, with cannabis and stuff. You know, because you manufacture it differently in every single state. You have growing conditions and environmentals that are different in every state. But we've gotten very good at having. You know, Secret Orchard is a brand for us that is a fruit forward, lower THC kind of entry, you know, vape product. And that we can spec it. We know that the terpene provider is the same one that we have in every state. We use the exact same mix of distillate. We have the same target on THC percentage so that we know wherever we sell Secret Orchard, the watermelon vape cartridge is going to be the same experience. And we've been able to do that with our Entourage line, which is a cannabis inspired, you know, strain specific vape line, because it has a little higher THC percentage, but we, you know, so that's 80%. And we know Terpene Belt Farms provides these terps, and they're going to have the same set of terps in every state. So it's a little harder when you're growing the plant and you're talking about whole flower, because the same genetics we have very similar genetics that line up with our flower brands. But when we grow it in Gainesville, Florida, versus when we grow it in Milford, Massachusetts, it doesn't look the same, right? Because you just have a different environment.
Well, I mean, you have genetic drift even within the crop itself. You can be growing indoor and you can say, all right, this one was a little bit closer to light or got a little bit more newts than the other one. Or when we cured in a room with a little bit different humidity level than the other one. It's a plant, and this is the thing that it's very, very difficult to educate the public, because, you know, my company, and no plug for my company, but we do genetic testing for humans to match them up with cannabis that's more aligned with them, so they can avoid adverse experiences, etc. But the challenge on our side is, well, now that you kind of understand that maybe you'll do better with a little bit more of a balanced one-to-one CBD to THC decarb. And maybe these are your terpene profiles, maybe, you know, linalool and beta-caryophyllin. But how do I make sure that you can get that product consistently in all the states that you're in? And as you just said, I like to use the example of like my GNC or my vitamin shop. I can go to anyone in Florida or in California or in Philly, and I know that I'm going to get the same exact supplement, but we don't have the same thing in cannabis. So, you know, flower is difficult. Vapes, you're absolutely right. Like you can create a product, you can create a consistent tincture, but in flower, maybe there's a way to be able to communicate to people and say, hey, give us a percentage of error. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it'll be similar to this, but maybe a little bit different, but still shouldn't have the same kind of effect if it aligns with your genetics correctly.
Yeah. I mean, and so we're, like I said, I think we're getting, you know, we have a commercialization process that is helping us kind of align product consistency in wellness categories like our tincture lines and our beverage lines, our edibles and our concentrates and our the vape category. From a flower perspective, what we are doing is aligning the genetics of these brands across everywhere. And then we're using the same lights. We're using, you know, the same, you know, fertigation system. And you know, so we are trying to get the as close as we can. But knowing again, right, I mean, that's part of the beauty of it is it's plant.
It's exactly it.
It's a plant. It's going to be a little bit different. And that's okay. You know, and in fact, we should celebrate that. So, yeah, I think that's part of the storytelling. When we talk about brands again, it's not just a pretty box, right? Like what is the ethos and the voice of the brand and what are we trying to communicate? And ultimately we want to have a two-way conversation with our consumers. And so it could be about, you know, for me, for the flower brands, where I want to get to is that, you know, you're following the journey of that plant, right? That our content is, hey, the Gorilla Glue No. 4, you just here, you can see it get cloned, right? And then 2 weeks later, like here it is just coming out of veg. And then, oh, it's in the flower room now, right? And you can walk it all the way up to, hey, that's in the stores next week, you know? And so I think that kind of visual education will help tell that story and get a better understanding, of course. You know, even Gorilla Glue No. 4, we could start talking about harvests. Well, this harvest was a little different because it was in the summer and a high humidity. And, you know, and then this one, right? You're kind of like wines and vintages, right? You buy the same wine, but
yeah,
you have this story around, well, boy, that, you know, 2015, it was like 100 degrees all of this. Like, so you got a whole different profile than 2016. And so I think there's an opportunity for flower brands to do more of that storytelling about the journey of the plant through that kind of 16-week process from clone to harvest, to drying and curing, and then talk about harvest to harvest, and you know that it's okay that they're different. Yes, it's the same genetic that you loved. It's back now. It's a little different. This one's got a little more purple in it. And here's why. And then utilize the expertise and celebrate our cultivators who are half kind of agricultural scientists and half artists. In this, and I think that's really engaging stuff. And I think when you think about building loyalty, that when you can build brands around the people behind it and the artistry and the agriculture nature of the plant, and that to me, I think has legs. And I don't think that many people are doing that real well currently.
Well, do you think that these names that we call the cultivars, do you think that they detract from this whole notion of this is a wellness product and this is something that's going to, do X, Y, and Z, of course, making no claims because we can't, but,
right.
You know, and you brought up Gorilla Glue No. 4. Okay. I mean, that's a strain that the, you know, has some lineage behind it and a story behind it. And it helped that the Gorilla Glue sent a letter of cease and desist to, so there is history behind it, and they did it in jest. But I mean, we have names like Alaskan Thunderfuck, Grandma Mary going into a dispensary.
Yeah,
I don't know how comfortable she'll feel asking for that specific, strain or cultivar.
Look, so this is something that I've thought a lot about, right? And you go back and forth because there's really multiple sides to the story. Like, you know, for instance, we have a genetic that we just started putting around in all our estates. And when we got it from the breeder, right, the name of it was Orangutan Titties, right? changed that name to Tang. Okay. So it still honors the lineage of the crossbreed, but maybe in it's a little easier to ask our female employees to recommend this to somebody in the store versus telling them about, you know, Orangutan Titties. So, but that's where the issue goes. So we build brands, and the brand can be very forward, you know, on wellness and medicinal one. But if you start getting away from the strain names, part of that, right, is an understanding that the name is somewhat derived from, you know, cross, right? There's a lineage and a heritage to whatever this new version or breed of a strain is. And if we just say we're going to go with much more direct, plain names, you're taking away some of the information, you know, that more educated patients and consumers, they want to know that, oh, that was a cross between, you know, White 99 and Cindy, and, you know, and they actually want to know, you know, what's the lineage, you know?
So that's what I was going to ask. And I'm in agreement with you, but how much of that consumer, like, what is the percentage of that consumer? Are they the ones that are looking at concentrates and dabs? Do you have like these connoisseurs, they want to know, oh, that's a lemon haze crossed with this? Or on the wellness side, do you have more of a consumer that says, I just want to connect something that's going to help me with sleep? I don't really care that it's a indica dominant. I don't even understand what that is.
Yeah. No, so I actually, you know, from my experience, the patients, right, when that voicemail, the woman left me who was a cancer patient, you know, she was talking specifically about the Birds of Paradise RSO, right? And like, it was that strain that was, you know, so it wasn't even dominant, right? It was this strain, because we make two others that are also, you know, indica leaning. So there is, I actually find the folks that are really looking to address symptoms derived from conditions do a lot of homework on genetics and understand the difference, and much, much more so, I think, than the average adult use customer, right? Now, you certainly have really passionate adult use consumers, right, that they want to know everything about it, right? You know, kind of like your craft beer enthusiasts, right? You know, it's a whole, you know, they're going to talk about hops and all that kind of stuff. But that's not everybody, right? And I think it's hard to say, we're only going to use those kind of strain names for these brands. You know, it's just something that seems industry-wide that it's probably not worth trying to make large waves right now on and getting away from the kind of traditional strain names, right? Our marketing team builds our brand names and all of our product names, but the guys in the grow are the ones that actually name the strains, right? Which seems, you know, like, what other CPG industry would?
That's what I'm saying.
It's guys in the factory are naming the product, right?
It's completely different industry. Well, that's what I mean. It's such a different industry with so many different nuances, because there's a culture to it too, right? That a lot of, and going back to Coca-Cola, there's a culture to that, right? There is like that kid with his grandpa that you were in and fishing and all that stuff. There's a culture to the cannabis industry, and it's different from like my daughter. And, you know, kids in college, they have a different connection to it than, you know, maybe we did or the generation before me did, that has this, you know, we overcame prohibition. We, you know, these, not that we overcame, we still are in prohibition in a way, but it's different than it was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, especially. But this notion of, you know, how do you create this? Yes, you have people naming them, but I guess what I'm alluding to is that the names will continue making these names, because the land races are no longer available. So we're always crossing and creating these hybrids, and it gets confusing to a consumer. You know, well, cross of this, cross of that. I don't understand indica sativa. So I always try to tell people, like, you know, find sort of the terpene profile that aligns better with you. What are the cannabinoids and terpenes? I don't care about the name. It doesn't really matter to me what it is, but you can have your shelf, all right? So this is the shelf that has, you know, four or five different products that are more aligned with you based on that, because you know when you, either you smell it or you took a DNA test, or you know, I've taken this and the other ones, no, that makes my heart race too much, and this one puts me to sleep too much. This is sort of right in the middle. So I know what fits with me. And this is, I don't know if it's very difficult to market around that, because as you mentioned, we have these names that people sort of connect to, but there's so much change in that. Because like, if you're making a Gorilla Glue number four and one of your competitors making a Gorilla Glue number four, it may not be the same, and you're calling it the same. So it gets really confusing. It's a difficult job to be in.
Yeah, you know, and that, but we're trying to get the opportunity to talk about terpenes and educate around that as much as possible. So we're in the process of building and rolling out across our whole retail network, you know, a new e-commerce platform. And when you get to our product description pages, we've got a terpene chart on each product, right? And so you can see here's the terpene profile for this one. So once you get past Gorilla Glue number 4, okay, and then there's a radar chart kind of on effect, right? This one is, you know, more sleepy and, you know, or energized, and so you can kind of look at the wheel. And then what comes next after that, you know, again, this is work in progress, is the ability to suggest other products to you based on the similar terpene profile, right? That's where we start. You know, hey, did you like Gorilla Glue number 4? Well, hey, here's a vape and an edible that both have similar terp profiles, right? That we make there.
How do you get your feedback that like you liked Gorilla Glue number 4 or it addressed my symptomatic condition or whatever? Is there a patient reported outcome kind of thing? Like how do you know that?
So what we're integrating reviews into our website, so we've got that. But we've also got a CX platform. So we do post purchase surveys, right? So they're automated. That, you know, if you go and you purchase, you're going to get a text or an email that allows you to take a survey where we can get targeted feedback. So we've got, you know, I mean, on a monthly basis, we get about 8,000 to 10,000 those surveys back. And so when we pull that together, it gives us a really good view, you know, not only on our products, but it, you know, the experience in our stores, our staff, and, you know, are we, you know, how did you feel we did in educating you about a product? Do you have questions, you know, and we, you know, cater training programs and you know, based on a lot of that feedback. So that's been incredibly valuable. We launched that across our 70 plus dispensaries back in February of this year. And just the amount of information that we get back is huge.
That's incredible information to get and then be able to create products around those. So on the consumer side, you're moving towards educating them. And are you doing anything on the healthcare professional side? As you mentioned, Florida, you know, you get a cannabis card, a healthcare professional has to make that recommendation, and you still, being a wellness company, there is a connection to, you know, a health and wellness. So yep. are you educating healthcare professionals as well? Are you engaging with them so they know that you have certain products?
We're actually in the process. I had a large team at Grow Healthy that called on the physicians. There's 2,500 plus physicians in the state of Florida that have, you know, the ability to write the certification for your card. And we've got two folks in Florida on our Liberty Health Science team that we're tripling the size of the team. We're going to 6 to do doctor outreach to educate them on our brands and our products. And to me, right, I mean, the state of Florida, we're adding about 26 to 2,700 medical cardholders a week, and it's linear. I mean, it just every week open it up the OMB report, and boom, there it is. And the one thing I know they all have in common, these new patients that are new to cannabis, or at least new to, you know, the medical program, is they all have to go to one of those 2,500 doctors before they make their first dispensary visit, right? So, you know, for us, it's about, you know, having discussions with the physicians, you know, about trust, transparency, science, right? The things that we want. We want to deliver to their patients who are also our patients, right? With a knowledge that it's not like a doctor writes you a prescription and it doesn't matter if you go to Walgreens or if you go to Rite Aid or CVS, because they're going to give you exactly what was prescribed. Depending on where that patient goes after he leaves the doctor's office, right? They could go to some place where they're going to get pushed. You know, maybe he says, you know, you should start out with a ratio to 1-to-1 or, you know, high CBD to low THC, but you're going to go in and somebody's going to be a bud tender selling you on something that's high THC and, oh, this is the best stuff, right? Whereas, you know, in our stores in Florida, you know, we want to position that conversation with the physician as a continuum of care. Right. So if you've told somebody that, hey, you're looking for help with sleep and anxiety, you know, and that you should be looking for this type of ratio product, that we're going to ask that question when they come in, and we're going to guide them to what they want, not what we're selling, right? Not what's on deal today. And I think that the more that we can demonstrate that to the physician community, you know, it's going to be good for our business, because they're going to trust, they're going to say, look, this is what I think you should get here, you know, and if you want to go somewhere, I know you're going to get that, you know, hopefully that's a Liberty Health Science store in Florida. So I think that outreach to the physicians is a critical component of our business, yeah, the medical market.
That's great. Glad you're hitting both ends of that. You mentioned quality at scale. Mm-hmm. You have shareholder pressure. A lot of companies in your space have that. How do you sort of balance the, hey, let's just sell a shitload of stuff because we need to raise our share price and satisfy our shareholders, versus you guys don't understand, this is an agricultural crop. We may not have the same consistency, pounds per lights or whatever it is that we did last month. As you said, you know, there was a conditional change in Georgia, in Florida versus what it was in another state. Like, how do you balance the two? Maybe that's not even the focus of your job, but I'm just thinking that.
Well, no, it is. Look, we're a publicly traded company that you know, we have to build shareholder value, and we do that by profitably growing our revenue, right? And there's always going to be pressure, right, to make sure this month the numbers look better than last month, and that, you know, we're moving up and to the right. But with that has to come a recognition that the long-term way to win with consumers and in this industry is to build brands that are based on quality, right? Because for whatever imbalances of supply and demand that are happening in a lot of these states where a bunch of big players all build cultivation and they all came online at the same time, much faster than the rate of growth of consumers. So now there's price compression, everything comes down. Well, I'm of the mind, as is our founder and CEO, that quality will always be a differentiator, right? And if we really nail what the definition of quality is for the consumer and then are married to that, then we can maintain pricing power, which ultimately will allow us to profitably grow the business, right? I mean, we could sell more and more cannabis at lower prices, smaller margins, right? So then we're not as profitable. But I think if we always use that quality at scale as our North Star, and consistently message that's our differentiation and our reason to believe across our portfolio brands, that's got staying power, right? And there's only so, if you want to play the game of, okay, let's just get more of it out, less variety, less worry about this one's just a high yielding plant, but it has no terpene profile. But hey, look, we got 200 grams per square foot out of it. Like this, right? We'd sell more of it. Like, you have to balance that. You know, obviously, we don't want to be growing plants that have a great profile, beautiful bud structure, but we only get 20 grams out of the plant, right? So you got to find something, you know, in the middle and balance it. But to me, there's lots of ways to be penny wise and pound foolish, and one of them is to take shortcuts on quality.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of publicly traded companies succumb to that pressure and they started making those changes, modification, and scrambling. You can feel it, and you're absolutely right. Like, sticking to your mission and vision is key, and being able to communicate to your shareholders, hey, this is a long-term vision. We're going to stick to this. And there may be some bumps in the road because this is a very difficult, you know, it's a very difficult business because it's still Schedule I drug, which is crazy. But, you know, and so it leads me to a question that sort of popped in my head about you're expanding rapidly through acquisition as well. So being able to come in and take over an existing business that's doing it in a certain way. They may have their own SOPs, etc. How do you overcome that challenge and some of the challenges that you may have of getting them in culture, in SOP, in processes, so you still can maintain that high quality output that you're getting with your other facilities.
Yeah, I mean, that's not easy. I'm not even going to pretend to say, oh yeah, we got that covered. It's culture, right? I mean, you've got to come in and there's SOPs, right? Hey, we're doing it this way. Here, we're going to move to these lights, and we're going to use to this watering schedule. That's kind of the easier part, right? It's just kind of roll out the SOPs. But the culture piece, really getting buy-in, and that was one of the first things I did when I got here, was really help define like our brand house, right? What's our purpose? What's our mission and our vision? What are our brand pillars that are non-negotiable in our core values? And I think, when you think about a mission being high quality cannabis, at scale, right? And people can get behind it. It's coupled with a vision of having a lasting positive impact on every community and person that we come in touch with, to be a force for good. Something, again, when you look for moments to take pride, some of the things that we've been able to accomplish through our corporate social responsibility initiatives. But then you get down to those, our brand pillars, right? And one of them is, it's what's inside the box. It's not the box, it's not the brand, it's what's inside the box, right? And that's a high quality product. And that's a foundational element. And, so understanding all of that together, as we take over an acquisition and, hey, we're just welcomed 1,000 new employees, right? Is to get them, all rolling in the same direction. And you can understand that, okay, high quality cannabis at scale, we do it better than anyone else. We want to be a force for good. But how do what I do every day, how does that ladder up to it, right? And when you can get there, right, when we can define the mission, vision, the brand pillars and all that, it's one thing, right? Hey, got it on my laptop. It looks awesome, right? Okay, that's one, but nobody knows it. So then how do we disseminate it to everybody? And that's good. If you can get everybody to tell you and be able to say, here's our mission, vision, and our brand pillars and our values, great. Okay, that's a huge step forward. At the end of the day, when you've won and you've really done this well, everyone in the organization can talk about what I'm doing today and how that helps us achieve those things, right? There's a great story about Kennedy having said, we're going to put a man on the moon, right? And he went over to NASA and he gave a speech there in front of everybody. And he went back like 3 or 4 months later, and there was a maintenance guy who was working on something, was sweeping the floor. And he asked him, hey, what are you doing? And the guy stopped and looked up at him and said, I'm helping to put a man on the moon, right? We're all rowing in the same direction, right? And look, are we there? I mean, gosh, we 7 acquisitions in like 14 months. No, we're not there yet. But we're putting a ton of focus on that.
Yeah.
Because it's critical. Because it's not widgets, right? It takes people. Like, we've got nearly 3,000 people interacting with patients and adult use consumers and plants and deliveries. And and every one of them is going to have pride in what they do, contributes to us, hopefully, achieving those lofty mission and vision goals.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And I was going to ask you a question about, maybe I'll ask it this way. Now that you just sort of partially answered the question I was going to ask, but you have KPIs, like it's a business. You measure KPI, but how do you personally measure success? Like, what is success to you?
In my role, right, it's that we're hitting on, the idea of trust and foundational transparency with our consumers, that we have a relationship with them where we know that our goal is to produce the highest quality products that either help them with a medical condition or just help them as part of a natural, health and wellness regime, or it helps enhance the good times in their lives and other activities, right? But no matter any one of those things, right, it's an agricultural product that you're putting into your body. So trust and transparency and I want it to me, I know that we're being successful if that's always our North Star, right? That every conversation is, it's not, oh, there might be an issue with this batch and this crop. Right. Well, you know what? If we just do this or that to it, then we can, you know, we can still move it out. Versus, no, you know what? The other question that's out, right? That doesn't fit, you know, what we're trying to do. And if my team's able to build brands that tell those stories that connect with people, to either, you know, help them again achieve a health and wellness regimen or enhance, you know, the happy times in their lives, then we're doing well, right? Those are tough things to measure. And the last one, which we are working on measuring right through employee engagement surveys, is I, you know, when I worked at Coke, you know, and I would go to a cocktail party or dinner, or, you know, just, well, where do you work? You know, it's Coca-Cola. People immediately were like, oh, that's fascinating. Let me ask you, you know, 1,000 questions, right? And, you know, now you can go say, oh, I work for a cannabis company, and you get, well, that's interesting, right? But to be able to answer that in that, you know, that everyone who works here with pride, like, yeah, you know, let me tell you how we help people and the positive impacts we make on this community. And like, and you see people have this pride and this glow about, yeah, I work for Air Wellness. And let me tell you 5 reasons why it's just unbelievable. And it's life-changing for me. You know, that's, you know, then everything else starts to take care of itself. If you've got 3,000 people that all believe that, know how they connect what they do to our mission, like, those quarterly earnings calls, they'll take care of themselves sooner or later.
100% agreed. I'm so glad you said that, because that helps to alleviate that stigma too. Because instead of saying, oh shit, I work in cannabis, and you're kind of hiding the fact. Like that was my moment of changing my LinkedIn profile at some point to saying cannabis. That was just sort of, I'm coming out of the cannabis closet.
Right.
And that's it. There's no going back. Afterwards, you're making that risk. But, you know, and all the people that looked at you back in the day when you were operating in the dark ages, you know, they're like, that guy is, he's stealing drugs and all that stuff. Now it's like, oh, my mom or my grandma or my sister or my brother or me, can you help, blah, 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 blah. So it changed all that. And I think by what you just said allows you to be able to, those employees to have those conversations with their friends, their family members, and lift the entire industry up. So one thing that I wanted to add to your KPIs that you were talking about, your personal sort of success measure, I think going back to the Kennedy story of having the person sweeping the floor, that's a really good way to measure success for you. Because if everybody is able, at the employee level, is everybody's able to talk about the vision, mission, and values and having those pillars at every single level in the company, I think that's a big win for you as well. So just putting it out there is another
measure. Yeah. I mean, to get everyone to understand it, to believe in it, and then it's our responsibility to empower them to make sure that they can, right, that at every level, I've got the ability to make a decision or to do something to ensure that we are putting out the highest quality possible product, right? Or that the best customer experience in a store, right? They've got, they understand it, and then they know they're empowered to actually make a difference. You know, that it's, that's the secret sauce.
So are you a cannabis consumer?
I'm not a large cannabis consumer. No, I mean, I've certainly over the span of my life have had different experiences with it, but no, I mean, and I think that's okay. You know, I have a ton of respect for the plant. I'm amazed by it. I have, you know, all these experiences where I've seen it change people's lives. And I take that to heart. And I also have a ton of respect for people that find, that the plant just enhances their well-being or just having a good time. You know, so I'm excited to be part of the industry, and it's, I take a lot of pride in it.
So what was your first cannabis experience like when you first consumed cannabis?
I remember, I probably won't name any names, but I was, you know, it was in,
name them. Come on, man.
junior high school. And I just remember, in a buddy's kitchen with like 5 other guys and just literally laughing for like 3 hours. You know,
so it was a great experience.
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience. It was terrific. And I know when we hopped on, Henry was wearing his Pink Floyd shirt, and I went to a Pink Floyd concert up at Foxborough. And, you know, that was, you know, one of those deals where you come in from the parking lot and the cloud comes out of the car. And that was a good experience. And
do you remember what year that was?
That was 94.
So that was Division Bell tour?
Yes.
If I remember correctly.
Yes. Yeah.
Got it. That was
Yeah, and incidentally, I was at Vanderbilt, I was the hospitality chairman of the concert committee. So we booked the bands, and then I got to, be the one to fill the rider and be backstage with them in their dressing room. So you're wearing the Foo Fighters shirt there, and there was some cannabis involved that day as well. but I remember Dave. So the Foo Fighters were there, and Dave Grohl pulled me aside, and he's like, "Listen." He's like, "I need you to go pick up my girlfriend. The band's never met her before. She's over at the Lowe's Vanderbilt Hotel." I was like, "All right, I can go find her." And, it's like, how will I know who she is? Like, I didn't have a cell phone. This was 97. He's like, "Well, I think you'll figure it out. Her name's Winona Ryder." I was like, "What?" And so, like, I went and I got her. And she's like, she's very shy, very quiet. But I remember, like, walking back into the room, and Dave's like, "Hey guys, meet my girlfriend. This is Winona Ryder." And it was a surreal experience. Those guys were, I've been thinking about that recently with, Taylor Hawkins passed away. And
yeah,
remember him the whole day was just playing the guitar in the dressing room for hours leading up to the show. But
there was an amazing concert tribute this weekend. Five hours to watch, and that's one incredible job. And Taylor's son going on. I saw Taylor Hawkins in his side band project at the Troubadour probably 2 weeks before they went to their tour of South America, and he brought his son up to play the last two songs with them too. So yeah, it's a big loss. Speaking of music, I'm a big music guy. So as you had some experience in school with music, I was a buyer for Tower Records. So that was my experience in music started, and beyond that. But do you remember the first album that you've ever purchased?
Ooh, man. It was probably a cassette tape. Wasn't necessarily an album.
Sure.
it might have been Born in the USA, actually. That was when I was
Boss.
12 or 13, big Bruce Springsteen fan for yeah. Sure.
What was the very first concert that you attended?
So the first concert I ever attended was at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and it was the Beach Boys.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling Henry before that my very first one was Pink Floyd, actually, my dad, but that was not the Division Bell. I'm pretty sure it was the Momentary Lapse of Reason. It's the very first show that they got together without Roger Waters.
Oh, okay.
JFK Stadium in Philly. And that's so my dad and his brother and my two friends, it was three of us. It was the first time my dad went to a concert, very last time. He's never taken me to a concert after that. It was first and last because it was people were smoking and drinking. He didn't like that whole thing. But it was the first time somebody passed a joint to me. I was probably 12, 13.
Tell you one of the coolest things. I went and saw Bob Dylan at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, and he gets about 2/3 of the way through. He says, "I got a friend I want to bring up." He brings out Johnny Cash.
Oh wow!
I mean, that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing.
It sounds similar. So there was a concert called Desert Trip, which they called Old Cella. Because it's at the Coachella site, but it's Coachella for old people. So they had Paul McCartney brought out Neil Young, and they performed together.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those experiences. What was the last concert you attended?
What's the last concert I went to?
By the way, I can just talk music with you. I don't want to do anything else.
Boy, it's been, No, my son's 10th birthday. We went to Mohegan Sun, and he was dying to see the Imagine Dragons. So that was I took him that for on his 10th birthday. We went to Imagine Dragons.
Very cool. So, what has cannabis meant in your life?
Well, this is the it's the craziest industry that could possibly be in. You know, both companies that I've worked for, it's the pace is frenetic. It's constantly changing, and your reaction. You know, the idea of writing a business plan in October and having it look like what it have it still be the same by May is insane. No way. That was thrown in the garbage can 4 months before that. So I mean, it's so invigorating, right? I mean, it's just it is such an awesome creative outlet. When you think about studying the consumer and trying to develop, brands and products and retail experiences that fit them, because there's no tried and true. It's not like, you go to Coke, it's been there since 1886, and this is how we did it 50 years ago, and maybe a small tweak to it. And, we'll try to grow 2% this year, right? We're trying to grow 250%, monthly. and you're really, you're getting to, there's no right or wrong way, right? Right. Here's what we think. And then you get to go try it, and the consumer tells you if you're right or wrong. And it's just a ton of white space for us to create. And so it's, like I said, it's invigorating. The people are great. I've got of nearly 50 people, and they brought the to be able to write the org chart up and say this is what we're going to look like in a year, and then how often you get to walk into a role, and then you get to pick the people that go in each of those boxes, right? So the opportunity to recruit and bring in people that are already in the cannabis industry, or bring them in from another industry, and kind of blend all these different perspectives together, and and ideate together. It's highly motivating. It's energetic. I work too much, probably. I'm sure my family would say that, but it's also, I can't kind of put it down. So,
yeah, I love that. And you guys and companies and people like you are the pioneers. So 50 years from now, people are going to be going back and say, hey, well, this is the way Jeff did it. And now you lay the foundation for, the next generations that are going to be in this space. But I completely agree with you. You have to have a passion for it, because it's the most difficult. People think, oh, it's a green rush. You're going to come in, we're going to buy license, we're going to make all this money. But it's not like that. It's a very complex, very difficult industry. And at the end of the day, it's a freaking crop. It's a plant. So it's like, it's not a widget, as you said. It's definitely a plant, so it makes it difficult. All right, so last bonus question. What describe what your room looked like growing up.
What did my room look like? So I had, I think I had a couple of Led Zeppelin posters in there. Definitely had a Lawrence Taylor poster for sure.
Doing lines,
desk and what's that?
Doing lines or no?
Not on that one. No, I didn't learn too much about my hero until probably about a little later on. I was like, but man, he was something to watch. I got my sports gear there, and like I said, some music posters and my desk and a pretty big bookshelf.
Cool. Jeff, where can people find out, contact you or Air Wellness and social or email, website? Where can people get more information?
Yeah, I mean, our airwellness.com has got, great information about our different retail brands and footprints in the states that we're in. It's got a nice little primer on our brands, our different product brands. And then, we've got a great, kind of 60-second video that really kind of brings to life what our mission is, the impact that we want to make on people and communities and our commitment to the quality of the plant. And I like to click back over there and watch it every once in a while just to kind of reground myself on what we're doing and where we're headed.
Very cool. Jeff, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you being on, and, hope to, meet in person someday.
Awesome. Yeah, this was great. I really enjoyed the conversation, Len.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, host of Casually Baked, the podcast. If you're curious to explore the highly responsible side of cannabis, farming, and legalization, I'm here to help lighten the stigma and build your canna confidence. Download episodes now of Casually Baked the Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And journey with me through the evolving cannabis culture and discover how and why people like you are adding cannabis to their wellness toolkit. It's time to get casually baked.